We got you up a little bit early, hey? I was learning about time zones today. That's what prompted it. I was like, oh shit, Tony's up at the crack to talk to us, it feels like. And then Logan's like, it's only a couple hours. And I was like, no!
I'd wake up at 3 in the morning for you guys.
See, I wouldn't even wake up at 3 in the morning for me.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Porch with Front Porch Music. I'm Logan, and this is Jenna.
No, it's not.
Well, it is. This week on the podcast, we have BC artist Tony Stevens join us. And he has a brand new song out called Whiskey in Colorado.
Did you know Tony Stevens had a traumatic brain injury? And that's actually what made him choose to pursue music after putting it down for almost a decade.
Yeah, that was a really wild story.
We had our jaws on the table.
Yeah, there's a lot of silence from Jenna and I in that part of this conversation because our jaws were literally on the table.
Tony recently partnered with Bobby Wills for Willing Records, where he is growing his career. He was a trending track with Stingray with his song Tomorrow Today, which got him his first top 50 at radio, which is really cool. And his current single, Whiskey in Colorado, is out everywhere now.
Enjoy our chat with Tony Stevens.
I appreciate you guys having me.
Of course.
Thanks for joining.
Season 3 of our podcast, and we gotcha.
Yeah, there we go.
How's it going? All the way in... Where are you located in BC?
So I'm like...
Your specific address. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Tell everyone.
I'm as far west on the mainland as you can be, almost. Well, I'm like in Cloverdale, which is like a suburb of the lower mainland, kind of like farmish land area slash city. It's like
okay.
In between.
Do you live on a farm or no?
No, I live in a house.
Okay. Right. In the suburbs? Are you the actual? Okay, cool. I'm just kind of getting the scene together here. Can you see the water or no?
I can't see the water from my house, but you can see a lot of the mountains. Mount Baker is just south of us.
Beautiful.
So, especially on times like this when it's just snowed like an immense amount, Mount Baker is absolutely gorgeous. And then we've got Golden Ears to the north, so we're just surrounded by mountains.
Yeah, you all just got slammed with a storm.
We did. It was, I don't think we've ever gotten that much snow in a single 24-hour span. And
how much was it?
My mom's car out, and she was stuck on the main road, and we went and had to go and get that sorted out, and spent half a day shoveling because it's just so deep.
Are you in a part of BC that expects snow but forgets it's coming, or in a part of BC that gets snow infrequently, like
people screaming? We've been getting snow for the past probably 4 or 5 years. It's just never been like this much in one day. Okay. We'll have like a week of snow, but then it melts so quickly. Like right now it's raining again 2 days later and it'll be gone in like a day.
How much snow did you get at one time?
I didn't measure it this year, but I think it would have been, if I had to guess based on last year, it was probably over 9 or 10 inches.
Oh, that's a good one.
Like there was a ton of snow in one day. Like we've had that much, but over the course of like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, and you
this time it was just that? It was like a blanket just was dropped from the sky.
But, although we're kind of used to that here.
Yeah,
like we just I think we got 2 feet in one day a couple weeks ago.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's wild.
It sucked.
My big viral moment on TikTok was last Christmas when we got
we got slammed.
We got so much snow. The front door opened and it was almost as tall as me in one night.
That's right. I did see that.
That's not that tall, but that is 5 feet tall.
That's a lot.
That's 5 foot long sandwiches.
That's how tall
Mr. that is. Subs, eh? Mr. Subs, eh?
Anyways, it's freezing cold and winter everywhere. It's wild.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it's the perfect morning for a podcast.
Yeah.
It is the perfect morning for a podcast.
So Tony, why don't you tell us a bit about, you know, yourself, music, how you got into the scene.
But don't graze over, like start at the beginning.
Start at the very beginning?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
born and raised in
Coquitlam, BC. which is, again, like in this general area of where I'm at right now. And my first kind of real exposure to music, I guess, would have been the church choir that my grandmother was in, going to church as a kid. And I remember specifically, because she had such a unique voice, like she had this opera type sound from back in the day, and they were singing hymns and there was the choir, and I could always hear her voice. And I remember just being a kid thinking, like, man, she's pretty brave to get up there in front of all these people and sing, even though she was with a choir, but her voice somehow punched through for me, at least. And
there's always one person in every choir.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very like, woo! I enjoyed it. But from then, music was always like on in our house, especially just depending on where the situations of life were. There was different emotive types of songs going on. There was a time where my dad was listening to nothing but U2 and Phil Collins. and
classic dad music.
Yeah. And then Alan Jackson and Clint Black and Dwight Yoakam and those kind of things. But then for me, as a teenager, Nirvana and Soundgarden and all that stuff came about, and I got really into music, as far as like consuming it for myself. And Alan Jackson was still one of the main CDs that I played. CDs, yeah, I said it. back when I was a kid. But then getting into it, as far as musically, I got a guitar given to me by my brother-in-law when I was about 15. And I didn't really think of anything at the time. It's just like he was moving out his childhood room, and he had this guitar in his closet that he never used anymore. He's like, here, why don't you have this?
Yeah.
And so then I just started to play by myself in my room, learned a couple little like licks. I think the very, very first thing I learned was the David Bowie cover that Nirvana did, The Man Who Sold the World. You know, so I learned that, and then I learned the intro to Chattahoochee. Very, very rudimentary. And from there, I joined a band out of high school, and we were in the, you know, battle of the band scene. We did all those types of like competitions around town. But what we would always do, we were like an alternative rock band sort of thing at the time. But during practice, we would always play Chattahoochee by Alan Jackson. It was just such a fun song. And I mean, to this day, every set I ever play, I always cover that song.
So what I'm hearing is you should release a cover of Chattahoochee.
Yeah, somehow, some way. Yeah. But then from there, I met my now wife. And I basically decided to follow the path of pursuing marriage and family and stuff like that. And it was basically the right decision.
Good answer. Good answer.
Yes. Yeah.
You can't see this, but he's a gun to his head held by his wife. You have to see it's the right decision.
He's around here somewhere.
She's like, why are you bringing me into this?
Yeah, no, it was just a part of, as a moment in time that was, you know, I switched my focuses. And so we were working hard on, you know, renovating a house, and I was self-employed doing contract work, installing floors. And I would just sing all day at work and annoy the guys who worked with me. But from there, basically what happened was, I had a little bit of a brush with mortality, so to speak.
Oh.
I had a pretty bad head injury. It was actually a wakeboarding accident where I hit my head on the water so hard that I had a bad concussion. Ooh. Even though I didn't really know it at the time. I just thought it was you know, the whiskey from the fire from the night before.
Yeah.
And the next couple of weeks, it just continued to get worse and worse. And I wound up actually being hospitalized for a week, about a month and a bit down the road. Because at that time, we were in the middle of, like, putting finished moldings on in the house and, like, trying to get things sorted out. And I just wasn't stopping. I was working, like, 14 hours a day at work installing floors and stuff like that. And then I'd go home and work on my house. So I just didn't give my body any rest. And it finally said, well, if you don't rest, we're just going to stop working. And I woke up one morning and I couldn't walk properly. And my wife wound up driving me to the hospital. And like hanging out the side of the window the whole time, if you know what I'm saying. And wound up getting transferred from one hospital to another because they couldn't deal with my traumatic head injury. Where the first hospital that we went to, they scanned me and they're like, well, there's nothing we can do here. So so at this whole time, I'm literally thinking that it's over. Like, it's that much chaos going inside my head. Like, I couldn't see properly. I couldn't walk straight. Nothing was working.
For those listening, Jenna and I are just have our jaws open.
On the ground.
Yeah, it was really, really crazy. And my family was there. And it was a very, very...
That's scary.
Scary moment. Yeah, it was a scary moment for sure for myself and for everybody. And there was a time where it was just like, well, I guess this is it. I'm lying there in the hospital bed in one of the halls. But luckily, they were able to get me to Royal Columbian Hospital, which is like a specialist hospital here for like neurology and stuff like that. And the doctor said, well, you've got 3 or 4 pools of blood inside your brain, basically. And basically what had happened was I had a subdermal hematoma is what it was called, where the layer between your brain and your skull, and there's a bunch of veins and connective stuff there, or not connective stuff, but veins that were bleeding from the impact and then from just not resting. And it would pool up in one section and push my brain over and pooled up in the bottom of my neck and cause like just crazy amounts of pressure on my actual brain. And so because it was hitting the inside of my skull, it made all these crazy symptoms go on. And so the doctors, like, they scan me, they get me, they're like, we're going into surgery right now.
This is like an episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Kind of is, actually. So I'm prepped for surgery, and the doctor's in my room. They're like, okay, we're going to be going down into the operating room, and this is what we're going to do. So he starts explaining how he's going to cut my skull, my scalp, up and above my hairline and peel it down so that he can drill a hole through my forehead.
No.
That's violent.
Yeah. So he can drill a hole through my forehead to release the pressure of the blood. Because he's like, if we can release the pressure, your symptoms will be gone immediately.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he was going to do a hole there in my forehead, a hole in the top of my skull, and one like towards the back. And he's like, yeah, you know, he's telling me all the warnings, obviously, of what could happen. And so, you know,
the scary stuff. I was like,
the scary stuff, you know, they're literally using a drill
on your head
to go through my skull. So, I was like, is there any other options?
Can we do something else?
And basically he's like, well, I mean, we could monitor it. He's like, at this point, there's just lots of blood in there and there's no old blood. So your body's not absorbing it and it's not stopping. And he's like, and I'm like, well, I literally haven't stopped for 3 or 4 weeks. Like, I've just been going so hard physically. And he's like, well, we can do this one thing. Like, if you can stand the pain. That was the other thing about this. Like, the pain wouldn't go away no matter what they gave me, because it was like a neurological thing. It wasn't like a broken arm.
Yeah.
Where you could take medication and just numb it. the pain was always like there, no matter what I took. And so he was like, well, if you can stand the pain, we'll wait 24 hours. We'll scan you again. And we'll see if it stopped bleeding or if it slowed down. And so I was like, you know what? It's worth not having my face peeled down.
Swiss cheese.
And the risk of
dying.
Yeah. Possibly not, making it out of it. So from there, it did stop because this was the first time I had actually rested. So the blood began to coagulate, I guess, and my body began to absorb the blood. And it was a process of about a week that they were monitoring me in the hospital. And from there I had to go home. And because I didn't get drained, there was all these risks of like brain aneurysms and stuff like that. So they wouldn't let me drive for about 3 months. And, being self-employed and relying on, I had a trailer full of tools. I had a whole lot of other subcontractors that, I was working with to get these houses and apartments finished. It was a hard 3 months, but luckily I had a lot of really great guys that I worked with and worked for me that helped it kind of continue to roll on. But as I was lying there on my bed for 3 months, I, questioned myself and realized that you only get one crack at this life, and you never know when it's when your time's up.
Yeah.
And I'd always been writing music and like I have a songwriting book and always jotting down notes and song ideas like this whole entire time and always playing my guitar. But for me, I sat down with my wife and I was just like, you know what? Like, I don't care if it is literally me just going to a open mic and singing covers or whatever. I just want to do something with this. It doesn't matter to me where it goes. I just need to do something with this. And so that is where it started my serious walk back into music. And that was probably about, my son's 10 now, so that's probably about 10 years ago.
Wow.
And so it's been, I did just that. I found an open mic somewhere around my house and just started going and attending those. That turned into my sister-in-law asking me to sing at her wedding. And the responses that I was getting encouraged me to take the next steps. And basically from there, I started booking gigs, and then the whole COVID thing happened. And that was right in the middle of when I was producing my very first song with the man, the myth, the legend, Dan Swinimer. Him and I met like in this, the most bizarre way too, in a great way. But that was like, it seemed like we were making lots of really good steps, and we were literally just about to be finished Moonlighting, which was the very first independent song I put out. And that was like kind of chopped at the knees. But eventually things came back around and we did wind up finishing it and released it. But during the whole lockdowns, Farm Country Brewing was one of the places that I frequently played gigs at. Mm-hmm. And they did everything in their power to keep live music going during this time. So they were putting up big plexiglass walls and having all the guidelines met so that people could still enjoy live music. And so it was such a blessing to me because I could still continue to play my songs live and get that time out there singing and testing out my songs and playing covers. And it wound up being that because it was really one of the only country things that was going on, people started to come.
Mm.
And wound up some of the radio station people locally, because you know they're used to going to shows all the time. They would start coming, and it kind of just, it's grown from there. And we've been releasing, I released another song, which you guys actually were the very first people to do some sort of write up about me, which was kind of crazy. It was Cochrane Avenue.
We know what's up.
We have to shout out our contributor Scott, because actually brought that he was the one, we had like our monthly meetup with everybody, we do like a little brainstorm, we have stuff that like's on our radar, and he's like, I actually have an, like, when I want to, like, I have a something else I want to do, and we're like, okay, sure. And he's like, this song, Tony Stevens, we're like, sure. Yeah. Okay, sure. That we hadn't, and
we're,
then
I'm, yeah, we're like, content is content.
Who the heck is this guy?
And we're like, wait, it doesn't suck, does it? Like, <we can't. laughs> But yeah, Scott was the one actually who found out. Like, shout out.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, really, really appreciate that from Scotty. And but yeah, from there we were in discussions with a few people, and the name, and Dan and I were chatting, and the name Bobby Wills came up. And I'm like, yeah, I know Bobby Wills. Like, I ain't all the way crazy, just crazy enough. Like, I remember going to work through some of the roads around town, pumping that on the local stations. And so wound up going into to meet with him. And he had started this independent label called Willing Records. And, you know, he was coming from an artist's perspective and, you know, understanding what it's like to be an artist on that side of the business. And him and I and my wife and his wife, we sat down, had dinner, chatted, and he gave us his vision for what he wanted the record company to be. And it was about the music and getting the music out there and development and trying to move forward to the next levels, which is what we were looking for. And we basically had made a handshake deal right then and there. And it wasn't for almost a full year after that, that there was actually pen to paper, but we were gung-ho as if it was. And that's just the kind of guy that I am. And I know that's obviously the kind of guy that Bobby is. And that just, it sat well with me. And we've been writing and recording demos, and we recorded, Tomorrow Today, released that to radio. That was a top 50 on Canadian Country Radio, which was absolutely mind-blowing. Sure, my first record label supported song to get that kind of support was humbling and very, very much, you know, affirming, I guess. You know, we're doing the right thing. And we're moving in the right direction. So yeah, now step, you know, forward to now, where we've released Whiskey in Colorado. As of today, I actually just, I'm getting these messages pop down because I'm on my phone. And as of today, it's actually being spun on JRFM. Yeah, so that's wild to me, because I've sent all my songs. Hey, congrats. And to have them, you know, actually add this one is, I don't know really what to say. Like, I've listened to that station my whole, you know, young adult life. And
that's great.
To know that they're supporting it is incredible.
When you hear it on that station for the first time, you have to get your wife to take a video of you listening to it. Those are my favorite videos on the internet.
Actually, let's preface that. Are you a crier?
Depends on the situation.
Did you cry when your kids were born?
You know what? I didn't cry the moment my son was born, but then my mom came into the room and I was just like, oh man, I understand now. And then I like, there was some leakage. You know what I'm saying?
I cry then. Might cry.
You never know.
Those are my favorite videos.
Well, we're going to clarify. Happy tears. Oh, yeah. We like happy tears.
Yeah.
No, I've cried. I've cried both ways. That's definitely the truth. Happy and sad. But
Boys cry too, Jenna.
I'm definitely not saying boys don't cry. I appreciate a boy who has emotions and cries.
Yeah, there's stuff there, that's for sure.
Do you have two kids? I thought you had a daughter too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. We've got a son and two daughters. And they're awesome. They're children, so they're growing up and it's fun to see them go through the stages of life that I remember, you know, being 8 years old. I remember loving Lego and, you know, obsessing over Super Mario Kart and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool to see that.
Do any of them have the musical bone or not yet? Or you're not focusing on them?
We're kind of just, you know, letting them develop into what they want. But Cadence, she's our first girl, she's always like in the back seat harmonizing to the radio, and I'm just like, oh my goodness. So but she definitely loves singing. They're all in piano. I was forced to play piano when I was a kid and I regret quitting it, so
that's the right thing to do, because my parents didn't force me to play piano. And I was like, my mom didn't play piano for 4.5 years almost. And she sat down and just played. And I was like, is there some form of like talent musically inside of me somewhere that you just never nurtured? It's your fault?
I've heard you sing. I've heard her sing. There's no musical talent inside of her.
There, you don't have to be a singer to have musical talent.
Well, you need rhythm. She was showing her dancing earlier and she doesn't.
And I hit him in the face.
Smack him.
No, I already did it. I did it with a sprinkler. Yeah. I went, knock him
back. I was just dancing. I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, I really was.
The dance turned into a beat.
Yeah. It was good timing.
Yeah, that's good. So
let's talk a bit more about whiskey in Colorado.
Yeah, so, you know, meeting up with Dan Swinimer kind of introduced me to the world of co-writing. You know what I mean? Like, I'd never co-written a song before in my life until about a couple of years ago. And
you got some good co-writers on this song. That's great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've had the opportunity to write with and meet some incredible talents. Obviously Dave Boris and Wes Mack are on this, right? We got together. I think Wes was zoomed in, and it was me, Dave, and Dan in Dan's studio. And Wes came in with this idea, drinking in Colorado. And I guess in the recesses of Dan's mind, there was a few years ago, I think it was 5 years before the right, or 8 years even, he had been in Colorado for something, and he was all by himself, and we were just chatting about, you know, being away from your family, you know, traveling for music, traveling for work, whatever it is, and that's how the song sort of developed. And then it just became, you know, the passion that you have for music, like the line, but there's another small stage, another small town. It's like you're chasing that because you have such a huge passion for the music, but you're singing songs about someone that's not around, right? So it's literally the pull of the people that you want to and need to be with, but the pull of your passion for music and connecting music to people, as many people as you possibly can. That's what it wound up becoming. And it was actually the final production is in that halftime, like beat when we wrote it was actually in full like jangle guitars. So it was like a totally different vibe, still had the same, obviously, message and stuff like that. But Dan sent us the demo a couple weeks later, and I opened it and played it, and was like, yeah, this is where it needs to be, 1,000%, and that quickly moved it up the the list of songs to get cut. So
So how many have you got kind of, like, you've been writing for a long time?
Yeah.
Are you, like, and you just released Whiskey in Colorado, so forgive me for being like, what's next? But probably so much that you're just itching to put out.
There is. We have this problem, I guess it's a good thing, of like, we got to pick which ones we're going to do next, right? So we're literally, we've got lots of demos. We've got tons of work tapes, you know, and we're sifting through stuff, and we've got a bunch that are like right there as far as, you know, being produced, but we have to make this decision like very quickly. But yeah, we've got lots and lots of songs, and for me, they're a lot of them have a lot of deep meaning, and you know, lines in them that are meaningful to myself or the people that I'm writing with. Because to me, that's what music is about. Obviously, you know, you've got songs like Thirst Aid Kit that also connect on a level where you just want to have fun, man. You want to say, I'm done work for the week. I need a break. I need to just unwind and let loose with friends. But I really love writing the songs that have that deeper connection or meaning to some portion of life that's not usually sung about.
What are you learning as a newer artist that you didn't either, like the things that you're learning that you didn't expect, or you thought they were something that they're a little different than they look like on the outside?
Yeah, being such a big fan of music growing up, went to so many concerts, and seeing it from like the consumer side, the fan side, and everything just looks so effortless.
Yeah.
Right? You go to a concert, it's all set up. It's all there. You know, you walk in, you're just in the experience. And not that I didn't like know this, but you don't think about how many people are involved, how many moving parts there are in a, you know, the logistics of getting a show put together.
The show from the audience looks flawless. Behind the scenes, it's chaos.
You have no idea.
It's madness. It's madness. And that's, and in a way that's, I like that for some reason. And when the pressure's on, like I like that. But for me, that would be one of the main things that I didn't appreciate from the other side of just consuming the music and the shows, and how much effort and practice goes into, you know, making it what it is. So that's definitely one thing. The other thing is just, you know, how much things have changed since the 90s with CDs and different types of ways to sell music. And I think when we were doing our band, Napster was the big thing that had just come on the scene, and like obviously that shook up
everything.
I have no recollection of that in my lifetime, of Napster at all.
I hate you.
You're missing out.
Yeah, you would download something and you're never sure, A, if it's going to be a virus. It usually was a virus. And B, you don't even know if it's going to be actually what you wanted it to download, like to be.
How pre-LimeWire was that?
They were like, they were kind of like neck and neck, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, Napster was definitely first and then shut down. And then LimeWire came out of that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like developed out of that premise. Downloading stuff, files. I remember like you'd download a song, and halfway through the song, all of a sudden it would just be someone screaming like at like 100 decibels louder than the song.
Or like you would like queue up at night all the downloads you want, so that by the time you wake up in the morning, maybe they're done.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it took me to last year to realize why my dad wouldn't let me do it by myself, like download it by myself.
And I was like, people use LimeWire for what else? And literally last year, I was like, Dad, I thought you were just being like annoying and not letting me like download music I want. I thought you were just being, and he's like, no, man, you were like 13. I didn't want you to download something bad. And I was like,
Yeah.
We're all just innocently looking for music on the internet.
Nope.
Yeah, I know, right?
Holy shit.
I mean, we were. But like, oh,
that song is not
a Sean Kingston song. When you say Napster changed the industry, it changed everything.
Yeah.
And I for the first time.
Yeah, I just remember the Metallica guys just getting so mad, and I can understand why, you know?
Yep.
Like, that was a big disruption. So.
Definitely. Yeah. It also just changed the way like people generated income from music, because being a CD was so much different, right?
Well, I mean, it got to the point where CDs were like $25-$30.
Yeah.
I remember when I was first, you know, working a real job. Well, I worked a lot of jobs through high school, but after high school, full-time job, every paycheck, I would go to the mall and buy two CDs.
Go to HMV. I spent so much money.
Yeah. Yeah, HMV definitely knew my face. But it was good times.
They should have had I'm visualizing, HMV disappeared in my lifetime, clear, obviously. But,
well, same.
Well, I like didn't necessarily shop there. I was trying to like visualize an HMV store and I couldn't. But
there's still the odd CD.
I'm visualizing buy 10, get one free. You were able to stamp your CD purchases and you'd get one free. You never got that.
Maybe, you know what? That's ringing a bell.
Possibly. It does kind of ring a bell of like, you buy like so many and you get like so many percentage off or something. Or,
yeah. I don't
know. Or you get to pick one from the $3 bin.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to understand. I remember like Sunrise Records used to not just be like you can still buy CDs there.
Mm-hmm.
That was more.
Jenna's here to make me feel old today. In the last conversation we had, she also made me feel old.
Oh. What?
I forget now, but it happened.
Oh, feeling old just means you're alive.
There you go. I'm going to put on a t-shirt.
We're not actually that far apart in age. I actually just think that shows how fast things changed a bunch, like, so quickly.
Oh, man. It's so quick. Like, from 2000 to now, like, 24 years, it's, like, crazy the amount of change.
The fact that you just said 2000 to now is 24 years just blew my mind.
Yeah. But at the same time, in those 24 short years, how much has changed? It's crazy.
And bad. Let's not to allude that it's all bad.
No.
So cool. I think once the life of the internet picked up, it was just like, who can get anywhere first?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big race, right? To like improve and advance and have the latest and greatest, which is obviously like it pushes things forward, right? That friendly competition. I was just air quoting there.
It's not a visual podcast. Okay, speaking of the internet, along came social media.
Yeah.
Oh, we were talking about MySpace earlier. That's what made you feel old.
Oh,
you
know, MySpace.
Yeah,
I was the tail end of MySpace, which isn't long.
When Justin Timberlake bought it,
what?
Yeah, didn't Justin Timberlake like buy it and invest into it?
Please hold. Running to Google right now.
Who bought MySpace?
I mean, at least that's what my friends said.
Yeah,
they might.
Yeah, in February 2016. In June 2011, Specific Media Group and Justin Timberlake jointly purchased the company for $35 million. On February 11th, 2016, Time purchased it for $87 million.
Good investment.
That was a shit investment for Time.
Yeah. Well, I remember when it changed, like, the whole format changed. Like, they should have just left it all weird and simple as it was. Because as soon as it changed, everybody was like, oh, like, it was cool. But it seemed to just fall off, like, immediately when Facebook, I remember my college buddy telling me about Facebook, and showing it to me, I'm just like, what the heck is this?
I'm like, I can't join. I'm not in college.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely was not in college. So, but anyway,
I didn't lie about my age. I waited until I was old enough to get Facebook.
Where are we going with this?
I'm not sure. Oh, social media.
Holy shit.
Where are we going with this? tell us about your relationship with TikTok and Instagram and all those things.
Well, the Instagram is definitely more at the forefront of my social media relationship at the moment. Mm-hmm. I remember when we were starting to pursue this, I just had some cousins over and we were all hanging out, and she's, you know, big into social media and understood how all the Instagram stuff worked. And at this point, I had a personal one for like my work, showing some of the work so I could, you know, get more jobs. And she was like, we're going to make you an Instagram account right now, like right now. And so it was, I think it was New Year's Eve or something. 5 or 6 years ago, and we just created an account. She's like, and you have to post stuff on here. I'm like, okay. And that's how it's done. And then that's the Instagram story. I mean, for me, I'm getting a lot more, it's becoming a lot more natural the more I do it. It's not necessarily something that is my first choice to do. I'd much rather write music,
for sure,
play music. But I do understand its utility in the whole process. Obviously it can be an absolute powerhouse for you if you can build it to that point. So getting it there is another thing. But I'm working hard on trying to improve that, because it is a part of it. And I do enjoy, you know, like editing videos and stuff like that. Like, I've got my own little editing software that I downloaded. So I'm making creative videos, which to me is a lot more fun than just trying to think of something to say, right? So,
for sure.
But it's more just about trying to understand that it's a way to connect with people, rather than thinking of it as something that I have to do. That helps me be a little more motivated to use it.
For sure.
Fair. I visualize your TikTok feed actually just being like home renos and DIY and like flipping houses and building homes.
The TikTok feed's a little was came on a lot later, so the TikTok feed is lacking, and I've just kind of like growing that as well. A lot of my Instagram before, we've been kind of more dialing it in and focusing it onto music and what we're doing, was, you know, like fixing our old vehicles. My truck's actually broken down right now. Poor Gabrielle.
Gabrielle.
Yeah, 97 Ford F-350 Power Stroke. When that song came out from Dierks Bentley and the new old truck song, I was just like, oh, I wish I wrote that. Literally about my truck,
not just because it's good, because it's my life.
and it's a freaking awesome song.
That's funny. Yeah. I think we're coming close to the end, but we need to discuss, because we have no context for this, but
what's
the deckhand situation? You've got your hat. I don't deckhand. Think you sent one to Aurelia, Ontario for Logan at all, but that's okay, we'll get to that later. Is the deckhand thing?
In Aurelia, and we almost met up.
No, it was so random. I was like, just...
Why were you in Aurelia?
I was just like scrolling through Instagram one day, and I was going through stories, and I was like... And I see... I didn't even realize it was like whose story it was. I was just like doing like the mindless tap, 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 tap. Yeah. And I was like, wait, that's Aurelia.
Yeah.
Who the hell is this? What are you doing here?
Well, I was actually down in for the first time ever that far east in Canada, with Dan. So his family is from Aurelia. So we were...
Isn't that wild?
So we were there, and we were connecting with some of the people in Toronto, just, you know, saying hello and meeting and greeting and stuff like that. And I had just, you know, wanted to go for a walk and had a Mr. Sub down by one of the down by the lake, and Logan chimed in. We almost met up.
He literally lives like
I can probably I probably could have seen you from my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sitting on the bench by that like old little not a steamboat, is it? Yeah, it's like a
it's like an old
party boat that's like docked right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but cool spot, man. I love Aurelia. Like what a cool what a cool little town.
That is such a hot take review. The city of Aurelia needs to hear this. What a cool little town.
What? It is, man. Like what the heck? What were we talking about?
Deckhand.
Oh yeah, boats. the deckhand thing. Basically, I'm a third generation gillnet fisherman. It's another arm of the many things that I have gotten myself into. Unfortunately, until this year, my uncle actually had to sell the licenses because there's nothing in it anymore in the river. But my grandfather, my grandpa, he actually built the fishing boats that we fish on.
Cool.
And at Cochrane Avenue, he built this boat. This is called the Escorial.
Uh-huh.
And that means pile of trash. He built it in the driveway of Cochrane Avenue. And his neighbors were probably just like, what is this redneck dude building a boat in the driveway? And so, yeah, basically I'm a deckhand. And, you know, the boats are all good and well. But if they're not, you know, if they don't have the people, you know, making them work and actually, you know, supporting the purpose of the boat, then it just doesn't go anywhere or do anything. So the deckhand thing is like people who support my music are kind of like my deckhands in a way.
Cool.
Because without people supporting the music and bringing it into their lives, it literally goes nowhere. So
like a boat, if literally like nobody.
Wow. No one's on there doing
it's like, not going
participating, it's just not gonna go anywhere.
Cool.
Huh.
That's the meaning behind it.
Cool.
It's also just a really cool boat that my grandfather really
again. Aurelia, yeah, Ontario.
I would like to buy one, please.
Yeah. Well, send me your addresses. Maybe I'll just send you guys a couple.
Fun.
Okay.
That's really cool. That actually also just is like, I think it's like kind of speaking to like the community you're wanting to build and the way you're wanting to build your music career. It's not like, what's going to catch on the fastest. It's not which area of the market's going to listen to me first. It's like who actually cares and who wants to be here. That's just so lost on some people at this point in their careers. And I think that's really interesting. That's cool. That's going to be a reminder like forever. Like, as your career changes and as you go, like have your, like the music industry is peaks and valleys. As you have those peaks, you're going to be like, who wants to be here? That's really sick. And when you have those valleys, it's like, who's still here? You know, that's sick.
Certainly.
Cool.
But yeah, it's, I also didn't want to have a big Tony Stevens on my hat. So that
you didn't want to rip your merch?
So that I could wear it.
Yeah. It's a little more subliminal this way.
Yeah, a little more subliminal. I mean, I think eventually probably do something like that, but I'll always have these hats.
That's great. Well, Tony, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time, waking up at the ass crack of dawn and fighting through some tech issues.
Hey, no worries. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Was it 8 a.m.? Is it 8 a.m.?
It was 8 a.m., yeah. But,
sorry,
you know,
my bad.
it's all good. I'm down for it. So
we loved having you.
Well, hopefully we'll see you in person again real soon.
Well, definitely we will.
Toronto.
Yeah, I'll show you more demos or more songs and stairwells. In the yeah. I've got a lot to show you. So I am.
Jenna and I talk about that a lot. Remember the time we were trying to hear a song on a stairwell while a concert was happening?
It's one of those moments that I don't think I'll ever forget, just because it's so funny. And it's like you guys could sort of hear it, and I was so like excited to show you.
All right,
Tony, thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to another episode of On the Porch with Front Porch Music. We're so lucky to be able to chat with artists and make episodes like this one. If you like the podcast, remember to rate and review us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. It's the easiest way to support the show. Remember to check out frontporchmusic.ca to keep up with new music releases, exclusive artist interviews, and more. We'll catch you again on the porch in a couple of weeks. On the Porch is hosted by Logan Miller and Jenna Weiser and produced and edited by Jason Saunders. That's me. Our theme song was written, produced, and performed by Owen Rigney.